Welcome to Wisconsin Public Television and Wisconsin Public Radio's coverage of the 2012 State of the State Address, live from the Wisconsin State Capitol in Madison. In a few moments, Governor Scott Walker will make his way into the Assembly Chambers. He will address the full legislature, the Supreme Court, and his cabinet. Good evening. I'm Frederica Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television.
And I'm Sean Johnson from Wisconsin Public Radio. In a few moments, we'll hear Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker give his second State of the State Address. And this year's comes at a time when Wisconsin is politically charged with recall elections potentially on the horizon. 2012 will mark the first time in state history when a governor is given one of these annual addresses while a recall effort has been launched against him.
Now, notwithstanding that, Governor Scott Walker says that he will tell the state of Wisconsin tonight that he is turning things around, that Wisconsin is heading in the right direction. Among other things, he'll talk about a declining unemployment rate and a decrease in school property tax levies.
But clearly, the circumstances from last year's speech, the governor's first, and this year's couldn't be more different. Last year, the governor, talked in broad terms about tough choices yet to come, talked a lot about the Green Bay Packers, didn't talk a lot about what was going to come a week and a half later when he introduced the collective bargaining bill. It's been the genesis for much of the political chaos over the last year. And is, a big part of the reason that we find ourselves in the situation we are today.
And clearly this speech will be taken as a political speech, given that he is very likely to be in another election after just 1 year. And so people will be looking at it in that way, similar to the president's State of the Union speech last night.
It's unavoidable. If this were, a regularly scheduled election year with an election on the horizon, and in November you would be calling the State of the State address, sort of the governor's re-election campaign platform. He may, in fact, face an election late spring or early summer. So, everything he says or does right now is going to have a political ramifications to it. And frankly, everybody listening to him in those chambers there is, in that same situation, as you see all the legislators prepared to listen to the governor's State of the State address.
We do expect, we've been told by the governor's office that this speech will not be a long one. They've suggested that it's about 23 minutes, not including time for pause, applause, and introductions. And we've been discussing that the governor is very disciplined in staying on message. And so we expect that tonight. We've had a quick read through his embargoed speech. And it seems to be staying on message about turning the state around, turning the state in the right direction, in his words.
And you mentioned jobs numbers at the outset. That's certainly something that you're going to hear both Governor Walker and Assembly Democratic Minority Leader Peter Barca, who will give the Democratic response later on, give different takes on. Expect the governor to highlight Wisconsin's unemployment rate, which has gone down, and the fact that Wisconsin added jobs in 2011. You can expect Minority Leader Barca to focus on what's happened in the past 6 months, when Wisconsin has lost jobs in each of those months, even as the national economy was adding them.
Wisconsin, the Democrats will point out over and over again, has had job loss numbers over the past 6 months. But the governor, again, and Republicans will be focusing on the fact that there has been some growth in job numbers, if anemic, but compared to the job loss numbers over the previous years, we are doing better, according to Governor Scott Walker. And again, we will be hearing from Minority Leader Peter Barca directly following Governor Walker's address. And we do believe that Governor Walker is standing by to walk into the full Assembly Chambers before those assembled here tonight and those across the state listening to this important address for Governor Walker.
I expect the doors to swing open any moment now.
Mr. Speaker and members, the governor of the great state of Wisconsin, the Honorable Scott Walker.
Thank you.
And you've heard it said that the governor is a polarizing figure. His supporters, you know, absolutely love him. You can hear the Republican side of the aisle in there cheering loudly. Tough to tell and hear where it's coming from, but there are boos in the chambers. And, you know, we can hear the sound of protest drums outside from where our vantage point. So not your typical entry to a State of the State speech, different than the one that he received a year ago.
That's what I was just going to say. A year ago this time, there were not the protesters and the drums. They came very shortly later.
The governor of the state of Wisconsin, Scott Walker.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all. Speaker Fitzgerald, Speaker Pro Tem Cramer, President Ellis, Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Minority Leader Miller, Minority Leader Barca, members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, constitutional officers, tribal leaders, members of the cabinet, distinguished guests, members of the legislature, my wife and our family, Tonette Walker, and part of our family here. And most importantly, fellow citizens of the great state of Wisconsin, it is an honor to appear before you tonight. Next to my wife is the Adjutant General of Wisconsin, Major General Don Dunbar. I want to thank him and the more than 10,000 strong members of the Wisconsin National Guard. And tonight with him are the members of the 724th Engineer Battalion. Stand up, gentlemen. I first spoke with them more than a year ago when they were deployed in Iraq. I greeted them in the cold when they returned home, and I saw many of them again this summer as they responded to the massive damage caused by storms in northwestern Wisconsin. Their dedication to their country, to their state, and yes, to their communities is a prime example of what we all know as the spirit of Wisconsin. We thank them and all of the other men and women in uniform who have served both past and present for their service. Thank you, General. Before we begin our conversation, let us take a moment to remember a member of our state government family who's not with us here tonight. Representative Tamara Grigsby is fighting a brave battle. Like so many of you, Tonette and I continue to send our thoughts and our prayers to Representative Grigsby and to her family. And I know we all look forward to seeing her in this chamber again soon. Tonight, we come together to discuss the state of our state. To do so, we need to remember where we were as a state prior to a year ago, what we've accomplished over the past year, and most importantly, where we are headed in the year to come. When I addressed you in this chamber last January, Wisconsin had suffered through 3 years of 150,000 of our fellow citizens losing their jobs. The unemployment rate was 7.5%. And after years of tax increases and budget tricks, Wisconsin faced one of the largest budget deficits in the country. Now our unemployment rate is down from a year ago. In fact, it's the lowest it's been since 2008. We're turning things around. We're heading in the right direction. During the past year, we added thousands of new jobs, and we balanced the state budget. We balanced it without raising taxes, without massive layoffs, and without budget tricks, all of which allowed us to put more than $1.2 billion of new state money into Medicaid programs like Badger Care and Family Care. Tonight, I want to share with you how we got here. And more importantly, I want to share our plan for helping the people of Wisconsin create more jobs, keep a balanced budget, and improve the education of our kids by working together. When I ran for governor, I talked a great deal about the core principles I call brown bag common sense. Now, one of those principles is that people create jobs, not the government. In the past, however, some thought that the government did create jobs, and that's how they justified raising taxes to pay for the unsustainable expansion of government. That thinking might explain why, prior to my taking office, we lost some 150,000 private sector jobs. In contrast, I believe that it is the people of the state who create jobs and not the government. With that in mind, I set out to improve the climate for small businesses in Wisconsin. Last year, we passed some of the most aggressive pro-jobs legislation in the country. And we did it with help from lawmakers in both political parties. Because these aren't Republican or Democrat jobs, they're Wisconsin jobs. Tonight, I'm happy to report that after 3 years of losing 150,000 jobs, Wisconsin actually added thousands of new jobs in 2011. Business formations are up by over 2%, and our unemployment rate is down from a year ago. In fact, Wisconsin's unemployment rate is not only lower than the national average, it's actually much better than our neighbors to the south in Illinois. Most importantly, we improved the climate for job creators here in Wisconsin over the past year. Today, 94% of our job creators believe that Wisconsin is headed in the right direction. That compares to just 10% who thought the same thing 2 years ago. And a majority of those employers say they're going to grow in 2012. They'll join companies like Rood Lighting and Sturtevant, or Uline in Hudson, Collaborative Consulting in Wausau, or Shopko in Green Bay, Generac in Whitewater, or City Brewing in La Crosse, all of whom announced new jobs during the past year. They'll join Kestrel Aircraft in Superior, I was there just a few weeks ago when they announced that they're adding 600 new jobs. In fact, Senator Jouk and Representative Moomer, I know this was a great team effort. And in fact, the mayor said that day to us that it was the largest jobs project in the region since World War II. But the inspiring stories don't come just from company owners or plant managers. They come from employees. Sandy Breath, who's with us here tonight, Sandy is one of those people who has one of those great stories. When the economy took a dive a few years ago, she took a pay cut. Not long after that, she lost her job. But today, however, she's working at G3 Industries in Mosinee. G3 is one of those companies that added jobs in the past year and now has plans to add even more in the future. Now, the owner told me that he's creating more jobs in Wisconsin because he likes the way we are moving our state forward. That's important to remember because without the positive changes, he told me he would not have had the confidence to grow his business here. You see, improving the business climate in this state is not only good for business owners, it's good for people like Sandy and her family. We need more stories like Sandy's in Wisconsin. So our Lieutenant Governor and I held small business roundtables all over the state, from La Crosse to Green Bay, from Superior to Racine, from Milwaukee to Eau Claire, from Madison to Wausau, we listened. In particular, we heard many small business owners say that they have jobs, but they cannot find enough skilled workers to fill them. This is a problem that must be solved. With this in mind, we introduced our Wisconsin Working Jobs Plan. In it, we double the number of job fairs, add staff to connect people to employment, make it easier for job seekers to get the needed skills, and we prepare to do more to promote manufacturing. In addition, we are specifically targeting our veterans for full employment. It is unacceptable. I think you'll agree with me on this. It is unacceptable to think that any man or woman who has served our country would return home and not be able to find a job. I've made the full employment of our returning veterans a number one priority of the state's Department of Veterans Affairs. You see, focusing on veterans is good for employers like Monarch Company in Milwaukee, who's looking to add machinists and welders. After a recent visit there, they told me they understand the benefits of employing veterans. Our returning service members are good hires because they're well-disciplined. And on top of that, they can get their training paid for through the Wisconsin GI Bill that we fully restored last year. To create more jobs, employers told us they also need help cutting through the red tape of government. Tonight, I'm announcing new members to the Small Business Regulatory Review Board, which has the authority to review every rule in all of our state agencies. I'll direct our agencies to work with them to remove antiquated and unnecessary regulations that pose a threat to creating new jobs. And employers also told us that they need a 21st century infrastructure system to drive economic development. After the previous administration raided more than $1 billion out of the state transportation fund, I took action to restore our commitment to good roads, freight rail, and strong ports. We know that a strong transportation system helps manufacturers and farmers get product to and from market, and it keeps good people on the job building that infrastructure. There is another tremendous opportunity for job growth in this state. We can pass legislation that will streamline the process for safe and environmentally sound mining. The proposed project in northwestern Wisconsin could provide as many as at least 700 jobs at the mine and thousands across the state. Now, I mentioned this idea several times during the campaign, and we've all debated this for months. Now it is time for us to move forward on a project that's not only about jobs, but also about the history of our Badger State. Our heritage in Wisconsin is also built on fiscal restraint. You see, one of the most important parts of our state constitution affirms that frugality in government leads to freedom and prosperity for our people. That's worth repeating. Frugality in government leads to freedom and prosperity for our people. I believe our founders had it right. Think about it. When I spoke here last January, Wisconsin faced a $3.6 billion deficit. Now, in the past, state government took more than $1 billion away from building safe roads and bridges, illegally raided the fund to support malpractice victims, and ignored a payment to Minnesota for tax reciprocity. And on top of that, one-time federal stimulus money was used for ongoing costs. All these practices left us with a more than $3 billion hole to fill last year. While these poor decisions of the past left us with a major budget deficit, Wisconsin was not alone. Nearly every state in America faced a budget deficit in 2011. So what did other states do? Well, some, like Illinois, raised taxes. But that only made matters worse. Other states used massive layoffs to balance their budgets. We avoided that in Wisconsin. Some states cut core services like Medicaid, but in Wisconsin, we added some $1.2 billion to Medicaid, and our reforms allowed us to expand family care, our long-term care program for seniors all across the state. Now, still other states opted to use budget tricks. But you know what? I didn't want to pass that burden on to my sons and their generation. I want our kids and our grandkids to grow up in a Wisconsin that is least as great as the one we inherited. With that in mind, we balanced a $3.6 billion budget deficit with long-term structural reforms. We thought more about the next generation than we did about the next election. And isn't that what you elected us to do? We kept our promises. It's why our ranking... It's why our ranking as a good place to create jobs actually went up faster than any state in the country last year. We went from years of being ranked in the bottom 10 to breaking into the top half of states to do business and hire people in. Because employers appreciate that we took our fiscal problems seriously and we addressed them with real solutions. Another important pledge I made was to not raise your taxes. That's even more important in a tough economy. Now, many of us believe that the $3 billion tax increase imposed a few years ago actually led to the massive job losses through 2010. In contrast, we enacted a budget in 2011 that lowered the overall tax burden in Wisconsin. For the 5 years prior to last year, the average school tax levy increased $220 million per year. Our reforms led to the first decrease in the school property tax levy in 6 years. The total school tax levy actually went down by more than $47 million. That means real money in the hands of real people. People like Pam Petrie of Rice Lake. Mrs. Petrie saw her property tax bill go down by more than $100 this year. I had a great time talking to her on the phone earlier today. She was absolutely thrilled with this. Or thinking about people like Gail Griswold of West Salem, who was surprised to see her property tax bill go down too. In fact, we heard about that from a friend she plays bridge with. Now, our reforms help protect property taxpayers like Mrs. Petrie and Mrs. Griswold and thousands of others like them all across the state. Still, there is more to be done to protect the taxpayers of Wisconsin. Last year, I appointed the Bipartisan Commission on Waste, Fraud, and Abuse. The members of that panel turned in their final report earlier this month, and in it, they identified over $400 million in savings for the taxpayers. We've already implemented some of the recommendations from this report, and to date, these reforms have saved taxpayers tens of millions of dollars. That's a great start. But identifying waste isn't enough. We need to eliminate it. To that end, I'm announcing the Waste, Fraud, and Abuse Elimination Task Force, charged with the responsibility to follow through on that report. Because I respect the hardworking people of Wisconsin, I will continue to be a good steward of the taxpayers' dollar. Eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse is a top priority of my administration. Now, just as important as saving money, our reforms help government work well in places where it does have a legitimate role, like education. As governor, I travel the state and see great schools all the time. And as the father of two sons who go to a public school here in Wisconsin, I'm reminded of that importance each and every day. I want to improve our schools and ensure that every kid, no matter what zip code they come from, every kid has access to a great education. Fortunately, we can have great schools and protect taxpayers at the same time. We just have to spend our money more wisely. For example, before our reforms, school districts often had to buy their health insurance from just one company, which cost them millions of dollars. Now they can bid it out, and that is saving school districts millions of dollars across the state. For example, places like the Heartland Lakeside School District saved nearly $700,000 just by switching insurance providers. In Menominee Falls, they saved more than $2.4 million, and in North Fond du Lac, they were able to keep the same provider, but saved in the process over $300,000. That's money that can go directly into the classroom. Here's another example. A few years ago, long before I was governor, a young woman was named the Outstanding Initial Educator by the Wisconsin Council of Teachers of English. Not long after she received the award, she was laid off. Why? Well, under the old collective bargaining system, she was one of the first to be laid off because she was one of the last ones to be hired. Didn't matter that she was one of the best teachers in the state. To correct problems like that, our reforms now allow local school districts to staff based on merit and pay based on performance. Now think about that. That means we can put our best and our brightest in our classrooms and we can keep them there. Yeah. 2 years ago, I spoke to the Convention of School Board Members and Administrators and laid out my plan. As a candidate for governor, I told them the system needed to be reformed and that we should empower local officials who are elected at the local level to make the decisions about their schools. And that's exactly what our reforms do. The best reminder of that came from the words of a superintendent of a small school district who said to me, "Now I get to go back to my office and focus on curriculum instead of on grievances." That's exactly what all this hard work is for, to allow our schools, as well as our state and local governments, to work better for the people we serve. Tonight, I want to thank the many teachers and public servants from across the state of Wisconsin. We appreciate your hard work and your dedication to serving the public. We're glad that Wisconsin avoided the massive layoffs of government employees experienced in other states. Now, looking ahead, there is much more to be done to improve our education system. No skill is as fundamental to student achievement as the ability to read. Something profound happens when a student passes from third grade to fourth grade. You see, from kindergarten through third grade, students spend the bulk of their time learning to read. But by fourth grade, our kids must be equipped with proficient reading skills so they're no longer learning to read, but reading to learn. That's why I was pleased to join with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tony Evers, to put together a Read to Lead Task Force, which was a diverse group of educators, reading specialists, parents, and others from across the state. to create a plan for improving the reading skills of our students. In addition to thanking Dr. Evers, I also want to commend Senator Luther Olson, Representative Steve Castell, and Representative Jason Fields, as well as each of the other task force members, for working together on Read to Lead. You see, Wisconsin used to lead the nation as one of the top-ranked states in fourth-grade reading assessment. But by the time I took office, we had sunk to the middle of the pack. We can all agree that we can and should do better. As a part of our Read to Lead plan, we propose swift action to get our students back on top when it comes to reading. We will fund screeners to assess every child entering kindergarten so that our teachers know the reading levels of each of their students and can put together plans to help them read at grade level. We require the state's Young Start program, which works with child care providers, to include a new focus on reading skills and new training in early childhood development. And we will implement a more rigorous licensure exam for elementary education programs patterned after the highly successful program in Massachusetts. And finally, we'll create a Read to Lead Development Council to raise support for reading programs all across Wisconsin. A study last April showed that students are four times more likely to drop out of school if they're not reading at grade level by the time they leave third grade. And they're 13 times more likely if you include poverty as an additional factor. It is our duty to help all of our kids learn to read early so they don't ever have to feel that learning isn't for them. Now, together, our most ambitious goal is developing a uniquely Wisconsin school and school district accountability plan. Dr. Evers and I have been working with a diverse group of individuals to develop a plan to let parents, teachers, and communities know which schools are performing well so we can replicate their success. And also, we need to know which schools are failing so we can help them. Ultimately, educators, parents, and even employers will be able to look at the scores of schools and school districts all across the state. Every school that receives public funds, be it a traditional public school, a charter school, or even a choice school, every school will be rated by a fair, objective, and transparent system. We are proud of the work done by this design team, and I want to again thank Dr. Evers and his staff for their incredible leadership and collaboration on this important project. Thank you. Tonight, I've discussed our challenges, our progress, and our vision for success as we seek to create a climate for more jobs, a fiscally sound state government, and an education system that works well for all of our children. Now I'm asking each of you in all parts of Wisconsin to help us move our state forward. Over the last year, we demonstrated our commitment to improve the climate for business here in Wisconsin. Tonight, I'm asking small business owners from across the state to consider hiring at least one more employee in the coming year. Imagine how many more people we could get working if we all pitched in together. To continue to improve our fiscal standing so our kids inherit a state without massive deficits, I ask each of you to share your ideas for how we can eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse at our website, bestpractices.wi.gov. Imagine how much better we could make our government work if we share good ideas and suggestions. And to improve the educational opportunities for all of our kids, I'm asking each of you to join with me and people all across the state and become a reading mentor. Now, last week, I started reading with a third grader in Milwaukee. I read to her about science and the marine life underwater. She read to me out of her book about the adventures of Edgar and Ellen. And then we did a reading exercise in the computer. I got to tell you, it was a lot of fun. And I was both impressed and inspired. Imagine how many kids we could inspire to be great leaders if we all reach out to our local schools. Closing, let me leave you with one final thought. Years ago, when I had the honor of serving the good people of Wauwatosa in this chamber, I learned a valuable lesson. Don't personalize your differences. Over the years, I passed that on to many others with a simple reminder that your opponent today may be your ally tomorrow. The people I've met traveling the state over the past year seem to reflect that simple concept of respect for their fellow citizen. Respect for their fellow citizen. Sure, there are plenty of people with plenty of different opinions on politics, on business, on religion, on sports, on just about anything in the state. But what I've found in most parts, at least in most parts of the state, is a sense of respect. Most of the people I've met in this state care not only for their family and friends, but for the well-being of their neighbors and of their fellow citizens. That's the spirit of Wisconsin. I've seen it in the faces of the volunteers who show up to help after tornadoes in places like Merrill or La Crosse or Marinette. And I've always seen it in the faces of our men and women in uniform, like those we met earlier tonight from the 724th. Moving forward, I believe that spirit of Wisconsin will help us improve the state of our economy, the state of our budget, the state of our schools, and most importantly, I believe the spirit of Wisconsin will help us all improve the lives of each and every citizen in our great state. Now is the time for action. Now is the time to get our state working again. Now is the time to move Wisconsin forward.
So that concludes Governor Scott Walker's State of the State address this year, and it was unusual, I would say, given that there were four disruptions by protesters who were in the gallery. This was a gallery that was somewhat tightly restricted from past years. They were on a list from Capitol Police, invitees only. There were, I think, just 12 seats, and yet apparently four of them were occupied by people who decided to disrupt Governor Scott Walker's remarks. Obviously, a polarizing figure here in the state of Wisconsin.
We heard the governor cover a few topics in there, talked a lot about what he's done in the past year, talked about balancing the budget, did refer to collective bargaining, referred to it most often as his reforms. Talked about the unemployment rates, but a number you did not hear in this speech that you heard a couple times in last year's was 250,000, that being his promise to create 250,000 jobs. He didn't reference that number in this speech today, and it's one you've heard less of from the governor in recent months, as it's become clear that that may be unattainable.
He did, however, say that he would be asking each small business in the state of Wisconsin to hire at least one new person. So he is working to get that 250,000 number of jobs that he would like to help create by asking small businesses to do their part. We should tell you that we are now joined by Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca for the Democratic response. And Representative, thanks very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Frederick. Nice to be with you both.
What's your reaction to the governor's State of the State of address?
Well, I was surprised that, there's such divisiveness right now in the state and polarization. I was surprised he didn't try to address that and identify ways that we could come together as a state. Clearly, you have a million plus people that signed petitions to recall the governor, and that wasn't addressed at all. Also, we know that The unemployment rate in this state, we've had job losses 6 months in a row. We're the only state in the nation that for each and every one of the last 6 months has lost jobs. Now, he did say, as you just indicated, that he'd like people to hire another employee each, which that's a good thing to do. But he didn't talk about the fact that we have a whole agenda full of items that we left on the table in the last special session that have yet to be brought forward, despite the fact that some bills passed the assembly, committees, one bill passed unanimously through the Senate, and they're just languishing. So I was surprised he didn't say, let's get back to work. Let's try and bring forward these bills that we never move forward because we were too busy on all these extreme social issues that tore everybody apart in the fall.
I would imagine the governor would probably tell you there's plenty in here that we can work on. He talked about that education package, talked about this Wisconsin working proposal he's got out there on job training, job fairs. What about those ideas?
I was glad that he brought up job training and he mentioned the skills gap. He does have a proposal to try and hire veterans, which I think is a great idea, of course. And he's putting forward job fairs, which I have no problem with at all. I think they, marginally could be helpful. But clearly, during his budget process, he cut the vocational colleges by nearly a third. So there's less resources to provide training. And we met with the vocational college boards, private employers, and they're all saying that we do need to close this skills gap. Now, we have a package sitting on the table. Again, I would have loved to have heard him say, let's take that package and move it forward because we know it can help close that skills gap. There's no proposals other than that one that I know of that's on the table. So I'm hoping you can see a sense of bipartisanship, but I didn't see a real reach out to try and accomplish that tonight.
I know that you and the rest of the Democratic minority talk a lot about the number of jobs lost over the past six successive months. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the reason for that?
Well, I think that much like businesses like certainty, I think employees like certainty too. People are unwilling to spend when their future is so uncertain. When you took away collective bargaining, they have no idea next year or 2 years from now where they're going to be. They feel not empowered, so they're not as likely to go out and spend money to get the economy going. Secondly, you have areas like the wind energy, where we could have 1 million people work. I mean, you could have, I think it's 100,000 people, Renew Wisconsin said, could be working in $1 billion of investment, but they don't have any certainty because they won't put forward the rules. So I think there's a whole array of different things that we could be doing that we're not doing. And I think the governor, even in his own special session, put forward, a couple dozen bills. But virtually none of the bills that had the most promise of putting people back to work were even brought forward for a final vote. So I think that we're missing opportunities here.
What about the mining legislation that was alluded to? You're going to be back in these chambers tomorrow night, potentially late, to discuss that proposal. Republicans are going to talk about that as their big jobs initiative. What do you think about that, and where will your members be on that issue?
Well, see, there's another missed opportunity. When Senator Miller and I met with the governor out at his governor's mansion in August, he had asked Senator Miller and myself to appoint people. He said he was going to bring Democrats and Republicans together on venture capital and on mining. He never followed through on mining, so there was no input put together on this. And I know local officials up in the northern part of the state, I know even some chamber officials I was notified, they don't support the current bill because the resources are not going to be there for them. There's questions about whether or not the drinking water will be safe a generation from now. Now, had he followed through and brought Democrats and Republicans together, I think we could have done this right. I'm still hopeful maybe in the Senate they will, but the bill that they have before us, I doubt will get any Democratic votes because there's too many questions about whether or not we can protect the drinking water and other environmental concerns. And certainly the revenue issue is a huge concern for people up in northern Wisconsin. Venture capital is another example. He said he would bring people together. I served personally on the task force. And we had Mark Buer, who's respected by Democrats and Republicans, chairing it. But as we were getting close to a solution, the governor pulled the plug and ended the task force. So here we are, 2 months, 3 months later, and we have no venture capital bill. And, again, it's hard to understand why he wouldn't want to reach across the aisle, why he wouldn't want to mend this great division we have in Wisconsin. I mean, that's probably why 1 million-plus people in just 2 months signed a petition to recall him, because you just don't see him wanting to bring people together. It's just this strict polarization and divisive policies that I think has torn Wisconsin apart.
We need to leave it there. Representative Peter Barker, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, great to be with you. Thank you.
If you would like to see the State of the State address and Representative Peter Barker's Democratic response, you can go online at WPT.org a little bit later this evening, and we will have it posted there. Also, stay tuned to Friday nights here and now at 7:30 statewide for more on this address and news analysis of it.
And you can tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio tomorrow morning and throughout this week for continuing coverage.
I'm Frederica Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television. Thanks for joining us.
And I'm Sean Johnson for Wisconsin Public Radio. Good night.